but act upon it.
Africans slam Israeli atrocities in Gaza. This week's edition of Africa Today focuses on the continuing condemnation of Israel across Africa by the masses and governments. African solidarity for Palestine has always been strong. Early this year, the African Union decided to reject the Israeli regime's observer status in the bloc amid the regime's crimes against the people of Palestine. The genocide being perpetrated by the Israeli regime against Palestinians in Gaza angered Africans who have also been victims of similar atrocities during the colonial era. South Africa's post-apartheid government has been particularly vocal in support of Palestine. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa speaks here during a recent demonstration for solidarity with oppressed Palestinians organized by the ruling African National Congress.
We have a full understanding of how the people of Palestine have taken up this issue, because they are people, as many countries and leaders in the world have opined, that they have been under occupation for almost 75 years. And people under occupation who have been waging a struggle against an oppressive government that has occupied their land, but also a government that has in recent times been dubbed an apartheid state. As people and an organization that has struggled against an oppressive system of apartheid, we do pledge solidarity with the Palestinians. And as the African National Congress, we have always pledged our solidarity with them.
To get an incisive analysis on the solidarity of the people of Africa with Palestinians facing genocidal crimes perpetrated by the Israeli regime, we have contacted Mohammed Khalid Sayed, political analyst and member of the Western Cape Provincial Parliament, Cape Town; Altaf Adam, founder of the Palestine Solidarity Alliance Youth League in Johannesburg; and Shahid Bolson, political analyst in Jakarta. A large number of pro-Palestine South Africans protested outside the U.S. consulate in Johannesburg, criticizing Washington's decision to send weapons to Israel, which is currently engaged in a deadly conflict with Palestinians in the Gaza. Similar protests have taken place in Cape Town and other parts of the country, where people expressed outrage at Israeli atrocities in Gaza and called for an end to violence. Khalid Sayed speaks here on the significance of the expression of solidarity to Palestinians by South Africans.
Our former president and founder of our democratic project in South Africa, Nelson Mandela, once said that South Africa cannot be considered to be free until Palestine is free. Now, he says that because he understood that as South Africans, we have experienced decades of apartheid, and before that, settler colonialism. The Palestinians are experiencing the same under extremely brutal conditions. So it demands of us who can relate to an apartheid reality, us who can relate to settler colonialism and its brutality, which has also been supported by the West. Remember, the same Americans, the same British, supported the apartheid government up until the very end, as they are supporting Israel now.
Shahid Bolson concurs with the South African president. Israeli regime is intent on committing genocide against Palestinians.
They'll never be allowed to return to their homes ever again. What the Israelis are actually doing is threatening mass murder. They're threatening genocide. They're threatening a Palestinian Holocaust. Because obviously, expelling over a million people in the time frame that they've stipulated is basically impossible, and they know it. So in other words, this is not actually a warning to leave. It's a death notice. We also know that they bombed the routes when any Palestinians did try to leave. So the intention is simply to kill. That's the only reason that they're doing this.
President Ramaphosa had harsh criticism for the Israeli regime, saying it was viewed by many as an apartheid state that had continued to oppress Palestinian people. He says the ANC stood with Palestine and its citizens, who have been oppressed for more than 70 years. Despite international pressure from Zionist lobby groups, the South African government remains resolute in supporting it. Altaf Adam, founder of the Palestine Solidarity Alliance Youth League in Johannesburg, says this stance can be a lesson to other African countries that are at times forced to back the Israeli regime.
President Ramaphosa's strong criticism of Israel and South Africa's unwavering support for Palestine can indeed serve a lesson for other African countries that may face pressure to align with the Israeli regime. First and foremost, the stance reflects South Africa's historical experience with apartheid, a system of institutionalized racial segregation and discrimination that oppressed the majority of South Africa's population. The parallel drawn between apartheid in South Africa and the situation in Palestine underscores the importance for empathy and solidarity when other nations are facing oppression or injustice. South Africa's commitment to supporting Palestine in the face of international pressure highlights the principle of sovereignty and independence, as well as foreign policy decisions.
The African Union Commission chairperson has said that the denial of the fundamental rights of the Palestinian people, particularly that of an independent and sovereign state, is the main cause of the permanent Israeli-Palestinian tension. Experts have termed this statement as insignificant.
What's happening now in Palestine is Palestinians are reduced to Bantustans, to homelands. You've got a situation where you've got an authority, so there's Palestinian authority in Ramallah and the West Bank. Then you've got Gaza, where Hamas are. It's become a human concentration camp. They are restricted into one area. Everything has to depend on the Israelis. And that most certainly builds up resentment, even amongst ordinary people. It frustrates, it creates psychological problems. So until the Israelis are willing, and there's been numerous United Nations resolutions on the need for Palestinian statehood, until the Israelis are willing to come to the table and to say, look, let us agree to a Palestinian state.
African people continue to hold demonstration in solidarity with Palestinians, while insisting that they are not opposed to Jews, but rather atrocities committed by the Israeli apartheid regime.
Israel is turning Gaza into a Holocaust, and this is not fair. We lived through apartheid, we know what it is, so we will stand by Gaza.
We here in South Africa, we are living with each other in peace. We're even living with the Jews in peace. We're not fighting against them here in Cape Town. So we are here to raise our voice and we say free, free Palestine.
Some media outlets have claimed that African nations are divided over the Gaza war. Many analysts have rejected this assertion, particularly considering the fact that only a few countries have spoken on the issue and only a handful have shown support for the brutal Israeli regime.
I would not necessarily agree to say that the African countries are divided on the issue. Number one, if you look at the African street, the masses on the African continent are extremely clear that they support the Palestinians in this particular struggle and they condemn Israeli colonialism because the African population feels the wrath of imperialism. Israel is an outpost. But number two, even at the diplomatic level, the mere fact that Israel's application for observer status was rejected indicates that there is largely a unity around the issue amongst Africans. So ever the challenge would be that there's somewhat of an indifference at times and lack of priority because some of them are fearing Western funding and those type of things. It's not necessarily a division, but I think a somewhat of a indifference or lack of focus and urgency because they have other fears, some of them. But we need to do our work amongst them to ensure that they take a much more clearer stance and a much more consistent.
Mm-hmm. Africans slam Israeli atrocities in Gaza.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio. South Africa says it is ready to mediate conflict between Israel and the Palestinian territories. President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa is calling for an immediate ceasefire and says his country can draw on its experience of conflict resolution in Africa and beyond. The belligerent Israeli regime has not responded to this offer.
I think firstly the initiative by President Ramaphosa needs to be welcomed. This has been something that South Africa has been trying to do for a while. We've even at a certain point, even within the Palestinian groupings, united, played a big role in trying to unite the Palestinian political formations. But there was a particular stage, I think under Yitzhak Rabin, where there was at least some type of, where the Israelis were willing to talk. Own view is that, yes, the president has come out very clear and it's the right thing to do. It's the moral thing to do. The ball is now in Israel's court. We highly doubt, though, that at this moment in time, given the behavior of Netanyahu and their own pressures inside of Israel and the need for them to continue this war, that they will at this point agree to an engagement. However, as the pressure mounts, you may well find a situation where they'll be brought to their knees and then they will agree. And that is when South Africa becomes an important player in this scheme of things.
South African Foreign Minister Naledi Pandor says colonial occupiers are using financial muscle to provide grants in aid to African countries and secure the depoliticized support of African countries for the oppressive Israeli regime.
Is that countries that are oppressors that continue to colonial occupiers are using financial to provide grant in aid to African countries and secure the depoliticized support of African countries for these oppressive nations.
The United States and other oppressive Western countries have been arm-twisting African countries to support the Israeli apartheid regime, and action should be taken to end this bullying.
I think that more African countries today, you know, in the era of BRICS and in the era of pivot of the global economy to the South, they also should understand that they are actually in the position to resist that same sort of pressure. I think more and more nations are realizing that the Western Empire, the American Empire, isn't what it used to be. Europe is imploding. The United States is bankrupt. And no one has to be bullied anymore. No one has to accept being bullied anymore. Colonialist forces are being driven out of Mali, of Niger, of Burkina Faso. Those days are over. And the Global South can establish a new paradigm in international relations. And that includes affirming the rights of the Palestinians, and it includes condemning the occupation, and it includes condemning the Israeli apartheid system. And I don't see any reason why any African country today should stand for that or accept to be bullied into backing a colonialist regime when they themselves have a history of opposing colonialism and resisting it successfully.
In 2019, Dr. Ramzi Barood, Palestinian author and journalist academic, visited Kenya to launch his new book. Speaking to a local TV station, he attempted to elaborate on the commonalities between the Palestinian and the Kenyan struggle for independence.
Frankly, and maybe I'm being a little bit too bold with this statement, but I believe that if you do not support the Palestinian people, you are betraying the very legacy of your own anti-colonial struggle in this country. Mm-hmm. You have, there are certain parts of your history. If I take that text or that passage describing these parts of your history, and I take the certain terminology out and replace it with Palestinians, it would read as if you are reading Palestinian history. It's one and the same.
The Kenya-Palestine Solidarity Movement issued a statement saying that it regards the Palestinian struggle as legitimate, similar to the Kenya land and freedom struggle and the Mau Mau freedom heroes.
The Kenya-Palestine Solidarity Movement statement draws parallels between the Palestinian struggle and historic movements like the Kenya land and freedom struggle and the Mau Mau freedom heroes. Highlights the organization's perspective on the legitimacy of the Palestinian cause. The historical context, the comparison between the Palestinian struggle and the historical struggles in Kenya were important chapters in Kenya's fight for independence from colonial rule. By drawing these parallels, the statement emphasizes that the Palestinian struggle is part of a broader historical context of resistance against oppression.
Shahid Bolson believes the comparison of the Mau Mau resistance in Kenya and the Palestinian resistance movement is appropriate.
Well, I think obviously the comparison between the Palestinian struggle and the Mau Mau resistance is entirely appropriate and accurate. I mean, the Mau Mau's grievances were rooted in land dispossession, exploitation, and obviously brutal colonization, just like the Palestinians. But I think, I mean, in my opinion, what the Palestinians have suffered and are suffering is considerably worse than anything that we saw in Kenya back even in the colonialist days. I mean, every Palestinian is indiscriminately targeted by the Israelis, man, woman, child, and infant, as if they're all active resistance fighters, as if they're all Mau Mau, you know, as if just by existing, they're regarded as combatants.
While some African countries, such as South Africa, have allowed massive demonstrations, masses in other countries have had to contend with smaller gatherings like candlelight vigils organized in Kenya in solidarity with Palestine.
Today we, Kenyans from Palestine and a voluntary organization, organized a candle vigil and sort of a protest candlelight vigil and people getting together to protest the ongoing genocide on the Gaza Strip and on occupied Palestine as a whole.
We are here to show solidarity.
Nigeria, the most populous African country, has seen massive protests in support of Palestine. A Nigerian speaks here on double standards when it's Israeli atrocities against Palestinians.
Look, I compare this with the issue of Russia and Ukraine. Russia attempted to invade Ukraine, to annex Ukraine as part of its territory. The whole world, especially the Western countries, supported Ukraine with military, financial aid, and what have you, against Russia. But now, compare it with what is going on, that Israel has grabbed all Palestinian lands. Despite the fact that Israel is the aggressor, the whole world is still in support.
In Morocco, a kingdom that normalized ties with the Zionist Israeli regime despite objections by masses, massive pro-Palestinian rallies have taken place across the country.
These are crimes against humanity, and we're here to express our solidarity. We want peace. We want international organizations to ensure that the Palestinian people regain their rights. And we also demand from the Moroccan state that no relation should be established with the Zionist state.
As the apartheid Israeli regime commits atrocities and genocide in Gaza, whichever step is taken to show solidarity with Palestinians, including street protests and smaller gatherings such as candlelight vigils, are seen as significant.
Kenya aligned vigils organized in Kenya and similar smaller gatherings held in solidarity with the people of Palestine in various parts of the world to carry a symbolic message. These peaceful gatherings are a means of expressing empathy and support for the people of Palestine. Depending on each individual country's laws and regulations and their policies around the Israeli-Palestinian conflict would determine the type of solidarity actions determined by the people within a particular country. However, these small vigils don't go unnoticed and can lead to a larger support base for the people of Palestine. And it is important to have these vigils to show solidarity, peaceful protests, remembering the lives lost, and creating global awareness, as well as calling for peace and resolution in the area.
The Palestine Solidarity Campaign, PSC, is calling for the South African government to end its relationship with Israel. There are growing calls for African countries to act in unison to boycott the brutal Israeli apartheid regime, just like the boycott of the apartheid regime in South Africa.
The issue around the closure of the Israeli embassy has become a hot potato and a debate even within the solidarity movement. It's a strategic question. So yes, African countries should act within unison, but do things within what is possible in their context and what is required within the stage we find ourselves in and the role that we need to play. So our minister, Minister Pandor, to this point has said, look, if we do want to close the embassy, it needs to be based on what are we going to achieve from it.
Former South African President Nelson Mandela famously stated that we know too well that our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinians. This statement is enough to eject Israel from Africa and galvanize all the people of Africa and beyond in their support for the freedom movement in Palestine and particularly in Gaza. Tell us what you think about the statement by Mandela at this juncture.
The statement is a powerful and enduring expression of solidarity with the people of Palestine. It underlines the interconnectedness of struggles for justice and freedom around the world. Some of my thoughts about the statement shows that solidarity in shared struggles. Mandela's words emphasize the idea that the struggle for justice and freedom is not only confined within borders and regions. They reflect the belief that the fight for human rights and self-determination is a universal cause that transcends national boundaries. In this sense, it resonates with the idea that the struggle of the Palestinian people is intimately connected with the broader global struggle for justice and human rights. Mandela's statement remains highly relevant in the context of the ongoing conflict with the Israeli regime by the Palestinian people. It serves as a reminder that issues of justice, equality, and freedom continue to be a matter of concern, not just for Palestinian people or people within the region, but for those who stand in solidarity with them all around the world.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
In the name of Allah, Salam. So welcome. This is another episode of Lantern. So we have a new story and a lot to hear about that and, of course, learn about that. On the continuation of this program, Lantern, we have a new story to listen to. The title of our story is Tyrant Needs No Excuse. A fox was drinking water from a stream on a mountaintop when he noticed that downstream in a valley, a young lamb was drinking from the same stream. The fox trotted down the stream and came up to the lamb. The fox sought an excuse to seize the lamb and said, "You're drinking from my stream. You're polluting the water that I drink." "How can I pollute the water for you, oh fox?" protested the lamb. "I am down in the valley and you drink upstream in the mountains." The fox was taken aback because the lamb was telling the truth. He needed a different excuse to pounce on the lamb. 3 months ago, I was sound asleep under a tree. You made so much noise with your baa that it woke me up and you ruined my day," said the fox. "How could I wake you up 3 months ago when I'm only 2 months old?" answered the little lamb. Now the fox was at a loss. Logic was not on his side. He needed some other alibi to complete his sly plan. "It must have been your uncle who was shouting baa and kept me awake." So saying, the fox pounced on the little lamb, caught him in his powerful jaw, and dragged him into the bush. A tyrant needs no excuse for his tyranny.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear audience, welcome to a new episode of Lantern from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi, and what we do in this program is to listen to certain stories and then try to have a little talk about them and, you know, touch upon some of the important moral lessons and religious themes in these stories in order to make use of them in our lives. Well, the story we've just listened to is about tyranny and the intention of the tyrants. You know, the story is highly related to one of the most controversial issues, not only in the Muslim world, but also in the whole world. It is the tyranny of Israel against the people of Palestine. The facts about the oppression against Palestine are indisputable. You know, Palestinians live in an apartheid colonial settler state, one that dispossesses them of their land for some 7 years and has forced them to live in dehumanizing conditions that are worse than an open-air prison. You know, Israel has made Palestinians to, you know, leave their homes. It has devastated them economically, and it seeks to break them psychologically and interminably terrorizes and, you know, periodically even massacres them as a policy. And, you know, in the recent events, we have seen that lots of crimes have been conducted by this nation, and we're so very sorry about them and so sad about these events being happened in the world, you know. The Israeli state strategically backs its right-wing settlers, who often make no secret of their genocidal intentions. Access to Islam's third holiest shrine, that is Masjid al-Aqsa, is increasingly restricted and effectively denied to most Muslims and Palestinians. The current escalation of Israeli aggression and Palestinian resistance began with the Israeli settlers occupying Al-Aqsa, hoping to repeat the Israeli takeover of the Ibrahimi Mosque in Hebron. much more could be said about it, but you know, the Israeli public mood is captured today by the recent election of an even more extremist right-wing government and the state-organized chants of death to Arabs and Mohammed is dead. Okay, now let's have a short break and we will be back in no time.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Welcome back, dear audience. We are talking about the subject of tyranny that needs no excuse. And we are, you know, raising the subject of the great tyranny of the Israel against the people of Palestine. Now let's briefly talk about the way in which Islam and Palestinian questions are remained unsolved. For believing Muslims, Palestinian or otherwise, the Israeli occupation of the Holy Mosque of Al-Aqsa and its environments make it an especially Islamic question. No difference in principle than if a colonizer, God forbid, were to occupy Medina, the city of Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and murdering and dispossessing its inhabitants and preventing the believers worldwide from making pilgrimage or ziyarah to it. You know, regardless of what anyone else in the world thought, it would be the paramount duty of Muslims to liberate Medina. And the Aqsa Mosque is no different. But there is more: life, human dignity, and freedom from coercion in faith are nowadays universally recognized rights, affirmed in Islam for all of God's servants. Okay, dear listeners, that's the time we've got for today's episode. Today we talked about the Palestine and we pray and we beg Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help these people and, you know, overcome this oppressed nation over the tyranny of Israel. Thank you very much for being with us in this episode of Lantern. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
They're taking lessons from the Nazis.
Oh, but Rick, we can't say that now. The State Department has literally just changed their definition.
Oh, yes. Yesterday, the State Department added the 11th commandment to that list of 10
definitions for anti-Semitism.
The new one they added yesterday said you cannot compare Israel to Nazi Germany.
Okay. Nazi-like activity.
Nazi-like activities, yes, excuse me.
All right. Everybody at State Department, listen up. The Israeli Zionists act like Nazis. Come and get me. Okay, I'm here. Come and get me. They act like Nazis. I'm not going to be told what I can say and what I can believe. I see the video of them shooting 14-year-old Palestinian boys. That's a Nazi. I don't care what their race is. I don't care who they claim to be. When you shoot 14-year-old boys in the head, you're a Nazi. Right? They oppress the Palestinian people. They steal their land. They rob them. They treat them like animals. Ben Gurion said, "We see the Palestinians as donkeys." That's how they view the Palestinians. And I will tell you, State Department, the Israeli Zionists are Nazis.
ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program For a Better Life, and I am Bita. Once again, I have the chance, opportunity, and honor to be at your service as the host of today's episode. As you know, in the last episodes, we were talking about the matter and the wisdom behind the sentiment and emotions that we're going through in our lives. As you know, controlling these emotions and these sentiments that we all have as human beings is really important and is one of the responsibilities that we have as human beings in order to have a better life. In this episode specifically, we're going to talk about the manner of thinking and its effects. As you know, several thoughts which are not based on intellect affect the lives of the youth, and we must fight against them. We shall cite a few of them, which are, everyone should like my work and accept my views. You know, we're like, I have to be accepted in the society. And sometimes this thought can improve in a toxic way that we think that everybody should like us, everybody should accept whatever we are doing. And in my own personal opinion, the underlying reason of this behavior, of this thought, is the perfectionism that is becoming stronger and stronger these days. And unfortunately, I have to kind of tell you that I am one of the person who is dealing with this problem, perfectionism. You know, it has many reasons, like the family roots, like the background that you have, you were born in, you were grown up, and so many other things. The other thought that I want to give you as an example is that I should always succeed and never face setbacks. And again, this is a kind of different angle of the underlying reason that I mentioned, perfectionism. And the third thought is, if the work is not as per my Lincoln, it is worthless. You know, we are seeking for the values, for the priorities that are based on the background that we are living in, not based on the values or spiritual importance that we are seeking for. So these thoughts cause misfortune and bitterness in the lives of youth. This is not caused by external factors, but conditions that exist within us. It is obvious that every work cannot be as per our wishes, you know. Hence, we should find an appropriate solution instead of being remorseful, okay? So, the first step that we have to follow in order to solve this problem of perfectionism, of these meaningless thoughts, is that we have to actually find a way to understand this mere fact that it's not always like we want it to be. So let's keep the episode here. We're going to go for a short break, then we're going to come back. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
It's all I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
Oh, 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 oh.
Cause your love is all I need.
Love love is all I need.
Welcome back. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program For a Better Life. As you know, in the last part of the episode, we were talking about this important point that nowadays, as especially youth generation, we're dealing with some thoughts, with some problems that are not based on intellect, you know, and we have to find a solution to fight against this thoughts. So I gave you three examples of these thoughts, and I mentioned that this, the underlying reason of these thoughts is the perfectionism that we are dealing with these days. And in this part of the episode, we're going to talk more about these way of thinking. Like the sentence that I should be free from all errors and mistakes or I will not be successful. This thought will create turmoil in the youth and will affect his ability and his willpower. He will be a victim of inferiority complex, deem himself worthless, and feel insecure and lazy. So, as we see, there are many harmful consequences of this way of thinking. Another one is everyone should love and respect me. If it's not so often, I am not a good human being. This will bring about anger, hatred, irate behavior, and bad manners in youth. So, there should be a way to stop this way of thinking. And all of these consequences that I mentioned, like mental stress, inferiority complex, and the behavior of other, destroys the personality of youth. And these sort of things are the consequences of this way of thinking. It is necessary under such conditions that the youth reform their sentiments and impractical demands. You know, we should show thinking that is not based on intellect. Investigate the causes of his restlessness and treat them. So, in this part, I want to give you some solutions. First of all, we're going to start from this point that do not be hasty while forming an opinion and making decisions. We are living in a modern world full of speedy things, full of fast procedures. You know, we just go through social medias and we see a life in only 1 minute, and this is fun, you know. It's kind of like addiction. We are addicted to being fast, to doing everything speedy. So we have to keep that in mind. We shouldn't be hasty. Another solution is don't view yourselves and others in the light of the work done by you or others. You know, it is true that we are the consequence of whatever we've done in the past. But it doesn't mean that this is the only and mere meaning of whatever we are. No, you can change everything you are, everything you did. And there is always this opportunity for you, no matter when you decide to change, there is time for you to be another person, to be someone you aren't right now, okay? So you have to always keep that in mind, which you cannot identify people by whatever they've done, okay? And maybe there was kind of external conditions, some difficulties, and so many other factors that you're not aware of, okay? You are reading only one chapter of every book you're facing in your life, okay? Nobody knows the whole story of your life and the whole angles. So another thing is, you know, we shouldn't criticize or approach others. This criticism is a bit kind of a big problem nowadays. We are learning that we have to criticize everything, every behavior. And if you don't criticize someone, it means that you know nothing. It means that you are behind them. And it's not a true mentality for this specific thing. And criticism is a really, really important matter in communication of human beings. And I think we have to have a kind of specific episode talking about criticism. But let's keep it here for now and go for a short break. Stay tuned. We talked about this way of thinking that is not based on intellect. I gave you some examples, some solutions in order to fight against this thought. And if we change our thinking from being irrational and unreasonable and, forego inappropriate demands, we will find rest and peace, relief from stress, and our lives will be pleasant. Only way that nourishes your soul. Don't forget that you have a really, really valuable soul, that you have to nourish it, you have to feed it, okay? And the only thing that feeds this valuable soul of us is spiritual connection with Allah Almighty. So don't forget this beautiful verse from the Holy Quran, that the only way you can find peace is the remembrance of Allah Almighty. Thank you for listening to me in this part. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
The Limelight.
The list of hospitals and other public facilities bombed by American forces, as well as their British counterparts, is quite long. Zionists have followed the same model to instill fear in Palestinians. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, on the eve of U.S. President Joe Biden's visit to the occupied Palestinian territories, the Zionist regime's warplanes raided a hospital in the besieged Gaza Strip, killing at least 700 people, mostly children and women. The exact death toll in a devastating strike on Al-Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza is not known yet, with some reports putting it at more than 1,000. It was a massacre, according to eyewitnesses. Despite attempts by the Zionist regime to shift the blame on the Gaza-based Palestinian resistance groups, in that order, evidence suggests that it was the Zionist regime's handiwork. Hamas said the attack mostly killed internally displaced people who had taken refuge at a hospital, considering it safe amid the indiscriminate Zionist regime aerial blitz that has so far claimed the lives of 3,300 people in the Gaza Strip. The fact that the hospital bombing came hours before Biden landed at the Tel Aviv airport is telling. Biden has unequivocally defended the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in the coastal Gaza Strip, even amplifying unsubstantiated claims that were denied by the Zionist regime officials themselves. He said he had seen the video in which the Zionist regime children were beheaded by Hamas resistance fighters, parroting the lie that was started by an Israeli regime journalist and later repeated by the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's spokesman on a live show broadcast by CNN News Network. The claim eventually proved to be a big lie, but the American president did not bother to offer an apology. At a joint press conference with Netanyahu in Tel Aviv recently, Biden said Washington would provide the embattled regime with everything it needed to defend itself, while repeating another crude Israeli lie that the hospital attack was caused by a misfired rocket by Palestine. U.S. President likened the Hamas resistance group to Daesh and described the group's Al-Aqsa Storm operation in the wee hours of Saturday morning, October 7th, as a slaughter. Biden told Netanyahu, giving him a clean sheet, "Based on what I have seen, it appears as though it was not you. But there is a lot of people out there not sure, so we've got to overcome a lot of things." Biden's unfounded assertions came after the Zionist regime's military spokesperson Daniel Hagari showed imagery and asserted that the propellant from the rocket had ignited and caused the explosion. The fact that Netanyahu ordered a deadly strike hours before Biden's arrival and eventually got the clean sheet from the U.S. president shows the war crime was carried out with Washington's backing. The bombing of hospitals and other civilian facilities is not an alien concept for American warmongers themselves. They have done it in multiple countries, including Afghanistan and Iraq, for decades. The anniversary of the bombing of Kunduz Trauma Center in northern Afghanistan's Kunduz province on October 3, 2015, including its intensive care unit, emergency rooms, labs, X-ray unit, outpatient departments, mental health, and physiotherapy ward, was observed just 2 weeks ago. At least 42 people, including patients, staff, and caretakers, were killed in the devastating attack carried out by an American gunship, which marked one of the deadliest chapters in the 20-year-long war. The hospital was operated by Doctors Without Borders, and the only thing Americans did was to apologize to MSF. The victims and their families were never provided justice. According to eyewitnesses, the USAC-130 Hercules gunship fired 211 shells on the main hospital building where Afghan patients were sleeping in their beds or were being operated on the operation theater. The then U.S. commander in Afghanistan, John F. Campbell, later admitted that the hospital was mistakenly struck without a shred of remorse and without any promise of justice and accountability. Americans destroyed hospitals in Iraq as well during years of military occupation of the country. In April 2003, U.S. aircraft pounded a Red Crescent maternity hospital in Baghdad, killing several people. The 56-bedroom Al-Mansur Hospital was the first IRCS health facility in the war-torn country. The list of hospitals and other public facilities bombed by American forces, as well as their British counterparts, is quite long. Zionists have followed the same model to instill fear in Palestinians. However, these formulas are bound to fail. They failed in Afghanistan and Iraq, and now they are failing in Palestine. The hospital bombing recently has only galvanized the Palestinian resistance. It has also exposed the deep alliance between Zionists and Americans and how they have backed each other's horrendous war crimes for years, including the bombardment of hospitals and killing of civilians. The international law is clear on hospital bombings. The Fourth Geneva Convention on the Protection of Civilian Persons During War prohibits the targeting of civilians, especially in schools and hospitals. But as we all know, international law does not apply to lawless entities. According to Wafa News Agency, the Palestinian Ministry of Health has said on October 24th the death toll from the ongoing Israeli occupation forces' aggression against the Gaza Strip and the West Bank since October 7th has risen to more than 5,795 dead. 5,700 in the Gaza Strip, 95 in the West Bank, and about 18,000 wounded, 16,000 in the Gaza Strip and 1,836 in the West Bank. It's said that 70% of the dead were children, women and elderly, and that 2,360 were children, 40% of the dead, while 1,292 were women and 295 were elderly. The Ministry of Health said 28 trucks that entered the Gaza Strip recently constituted only 3% of the daily import rate before the aggression. It said it monitored cases and smallpox, scabies and diarrhea as a result of a poor sanitary environment and the use of water from unsafe sources. The ministry pointed out that 3 additional hospitals were out of service, bringing the number of hospitals that stopped working as a result of the bombing or running out of fuel to 10 hospitals out of 35 in the Gaza Strip, which represents 28%, and that 10,600 liters of fuel were secured from the World Health Organization and UNRWA to Al-Shifa Hospital. Wafa News Agency added 5 hospitals had set up tents on their premises to accommodate the overcrowding, and their daily consumption of medical consumables was equivalent to their monthly consumption in the days before the aggression, while the shortage of safe water reached 3 liters per capita per day out of the 50 liters to 100 liters recommended by the World Health Organization. The Ministry of Health estimated the number of displaced people in the Gaza Strip at about 1.4 million, with 685,000 displaced among other families, 565,000 displaced in 148 schools affiliated with the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Refugees, UNRWA, and 101,000 in mosques, churches, and public places, and 70,000 in 67 public schools. The report indicated that 42% of the housing units in the Gaza Strip were destroyed as a result of the violent Israeli regime bombardment since the start of aggression on October 7. The number of completely destroyed housing units reached 26,684, 140,500 were partially destroyed, and 9 hospitals were out of service after their destruction, in addition to 178 educational institutions, including 140 government schools and 20 UNRWA schools.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Assalamu alaikum, dear souls in search of divine parenting wisdom. This is Zainab, your host on IRIB English Radio, prepare to be enlightened on Islamic upbringing, the program where we unravel the strategies of nurturing children within the Islamic framework. Our expert